Good afternoon. This is Bill Allen coming to you from Tyler, Texas. May look a little bit different today. I'm fooling around with some of the lighting stuff and all of that. And so let me know what you think. If you like the other way better with a little bit more light and a little bit broader view, that's okay. But anyway, this thought that I would give it a try. So there you go. Today we are continuing our study through the book of Jeremiah and Ezekiel and others as we come to the end of the nation of Judah. Yes, that's right. Today is the day that the people of Jerusalem are finally all taken into exile. We've seen a lot of them already in the first deportation, sometime around 605 BC at the hand of the Babylonians. A lot of the best of the best were taken, and that included Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That, by the way, you will be reading about in the next few days if you're following along with F. Ligard Smith's The Daily Bible in Chronological Order. And we'll get to hear about the fiery furnace next week when we get back together again, which, by the way, will not be next Tuesday. We are taking the weekend off, and so I'll be out of the office until Wednesday. So we'll work on the next episode of these studies a week from today. But for now, we're looking at the third deportation. That first one included Daniel and his three friends. The second one included the majority of the people. 10,000 were taken into captivity. And including the king, who actually would survive and was replaced. And then now we're seeing the walls come down. We're seeing the Babylonian army attack Jerusalem itself inside the city and kill off the king and his sons and take the remaining people, a lot of them, into captivity, but not Jeremiah. Jeremiah is spared. The king has a soft spot for him of Babylon because Jeremiah told the truth to the people and told them what was going on. And so now Jeremiah is left there, except against his will, as you'll be reading, he will be taken off to Egypt. And that's where Jeremiah's life is lived out, that last period of time. Unfortunately, a very humiliating loss. He did not want to go. He would have been willing to go to Babylon with the king of Babylon, but he told him to stay in Jerusalem and report to the king that he had put there. And Gedaliah, the leader, decides that Jeremiah is going to have to go with the group that went to Egypt. So that's where we are, and there's a lot. One of the most important books that describes this time is the Book of Lamentations. And it is this book that Jeremiah is writing as he considers this horrible time. But let's get there. Let's talk about the fall of Jerusalem. If you're following along in your daily Bible, it is August 28th reading. And so we're right on time here as we read these next few days, looking at the fall of Jerusalem and the Book of Lamentations. The Book of Lamentations will take a couple of days today and tomorrow, but we're going to cover it all today. First, in 586 BC, the wall is breached and Jerusalem is destroyed. Zedekiah, the king, and his troops flee the city by night, but they are quickly captured. And then the glorious Temple of Solomon and the royal palace are razed to the ground, and the remaining noblemen and soldiers are killed. The temple treasures are taken, and hundreds and hundreds of people, the last ones, are taken into Babylon, and then only a few are allowed to remain. On the ninth day of the fourth month, so says Jeremiah 39, of Zedekiah's 11th year, the city wall was broken through. Then all the officials of the king of Babylon came and took seats in the middle gate. It was a horrible, tragic, humiliating thing. Imagine a foreign nation, army attacking America, and taking their place, the officials of that attacking nation, our enemies, taking their seats in the White House or in Congress. That's what has happened. In Jeremiah 39, when King Zedekiah, king of Judah, and all the soldiers saw them, they fled. They left the city at night by way of the king's garden, through the gate between the two walls, and headed toward the Arabah, headed south. But unfortunately, it was not to be. The Babylonian army pursued them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. Jeremiah 52, verse 9, Zedekiah, the king of the Jews, was taken to the king of Babylon at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that's in modern-day Syria, where he pronounced very far northeast of Jerusalem, but not as far as Babylon, which would be in modern-day Iraq or Iran. Zedekiah was taken to the king of Babylon at Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he pronounced sentence on him. There at Riblah, the king of Babylon killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He also killed all the officials of Judah. Then he put out Zedekiah's eyes, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon, where he put him in prison until the day of his death. God didn't spare the people of Israel from this kind of horrible, violent, cruel punishment. It's not that he wanted it to happen, but it's that he had warned his people time and time again. And the king of Babylon was not stopped from providing this cruel punishment to the people of God. Remember way back when we read the book of Habakkuk? And Habakkuk was complaining about the unrighteousness and the injustice and the immorality and the idolatry that was going on in Jerusalem and in the land of Judah. And God said, well, I'm going to deal with them. I'm going to bring in the Babylonians, and they're going to destroy them. And Habakkuk said, no, you can't do that. You can't use a less righteous nation to punish a more righteous nation. And that's when God answers the prophet Habakkuk in Habakkuk chapter 2 and says, my righteous one will live by faith. You'll never understand this, but you'll just have to trust me in the midst of it all. And that's what God is telling his people. We sing the song, Trust and Obey. I mention it a lot. And that's what the Israelites did not do. They did not trust God enough to obey him. And now Jeremiah has been warning them and warning them and warning them literally for decades. And they refused to repent. Instead, they said, oh, we can do it. Oh, God is with us. Oh, he doesn't care how we act. Oh, he doesn't see our sins. Whatever they might have said. Jeremiah says he sees and he knows and he will punish. And this is the day. This is the day. There is a time when God's patience will run thin and it'll be gone. And that's true of individuals when Jesus returns, and that's also true of nations, because our God is still overall. He is still the sovereign King of Kings and Lord of Lords, as we sing, this is still my Father's world. And today is the day, as we're reading in this section, that his punishment is coming upon his own people, the Jews, the descendants of Abraham. A lot of them have already been carried away into captivity. And so we know, in spite of all the horrible and violent loss and the tragedy of Solomon's temple and the royal palace being destroyed and all of the wonderful treasures being taken away into Babylon, still there is what they call that remnant. Still there are people who survive. And God will continue to be with them. God brought up against them, against the Jews, the king of the Babylonians, who killed their young men with the sword in the sanctuary and did not spare young men or young women, the elderly or the infirm. God gave them all into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. On the 10th day of the 5th month in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the commander of the imperial guard, who served the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He set fire to the temple of the Lord, the royal palace, and all the houses of Jerusalem. Every important building he burned down. The whole Babylonian army, under the commander of the imperial guard, broke down the walls around Jerusalem. So writes Jeremiah in Jeremiah 52. And he continues, and he again reports that the king and his sons were killed there at Riblah, and ultimately all the people, except for just a few, taken into captivity. But not just the people, and not just the buildings destroyed and the houses, but all those treasures. Jeremiah 52, verse 17, the Babylonians broke up the bronze pillars, the movable stands, and the bronze sea that were at the temple of the Lord, and they carried all the bronze to Babylon. They also took away the pots, shovels, wick trimmers, sprinkling bowls, dishes, and all the bronze articles used in the temple service. The commander of the imperial guard took away the basins, censers, sprinkling bowls, pots, lampstands, dishes, and bowls used for drink offerings, all that were made of pure gold or silver. And all of the treasures in King Solomon's temple that he had built, that he had dedicated so wonderfully, so long ago, 300 or plus years before this is happening, all of that was destroyed. Jeremiah 39, Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guard, carried into exile some of the poorest people and those who remained in the city, along with the rest of the craftsmen and those who had deserted to the king of Babylon. But Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guard, left behind in the land of Judah some of the poor people who owned nothing, and at that time he gave them vineyards and fields. So Judah went into captivity, Jeremiah writes, away from her land. And that is exactly the fate that awaited them. 4,600 people sent to Babylon for exile in this last third wave of deportations. And so the writer of 2 Chronicles writes this in chapter 36, the land enjoyed its Sabbath rest. All the time of its desolation it rested until the 70 years were completed in fulfillment of the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah. And so that's what happens. Jeremiah sees his people actually do exactly what he had been warning them was going to happen. Jeremiah was saved. He wasn't killed. Again, the Babylonians had mercy on him and gave him provisions. He was to report to the ruler that had been put in charge by the Babylonians. And his name was Gedaliah. Jeremiah grieves, and he is called the weeping prophet, and very likely because of the book we're now going to summarize, the book of Lamentations. It is a beautiful book. In fact, it's such a beautiful, sad recount of the tragedy and the suffering that the book of Lamentations is read every year by the Jews on the anniversary of the day that this temple was destroyed. And it's read also on the day that a later temple, Herod's temple as they call it, would be destroyed, which was the temple in the time of Jesus, destroyed by the Romans in AD 70 when Jerusalem would be destroyed once again. And it's just anytime people go and visit Jerusalem and that Western Wall, what they call the Wailing Wall, one of the few things left of that ancient city of Jerusalem, they read the Book of Lamentations. Why did they do that, Bill? Well, we'll read a little bit through these chapters before we close our study today. Lamentations chapter 1, how deserted lies the city, once so full of people. How like a widow is she, who once was great among the nations. She who was queen among the provinces has now become a slave. Later on, after affliction and harsh labor, Judah has gone into exile. The Lord has brought her grief because of her many sins. All the splendor has departed from daughter Zion. So Jeremiah laments. He continues on in chapter 1. Her fall was astounding. There was none to comfort her. Look, Lord, on my affliction, for the enemy has triumphed, Jeremiah calls out. Still continuing on, my sins have been bound into a yoke. By his hands they were woven together. They have been hung on my neck, and the Lord has sapped my strength. He has given me into the hands of those I cannot withstand. This is what Jeremiah writes, and this is how he is feeling. As he sees his city go, and at times he had a yoke around him. He had chains. He was imprisoned as well, sometimes by his own people, and then ultimately at the hands of the Babylonians. But he was quickly freed because they knew that he was a man who had tried to warn them and tried to get them to surrender according to the word of the Lord. Jeremiah 1 continues further down. Outside, the sword bereaves. Inside, there is only death. And so outside the city, the Babylonians are killing people. Inside the city, there is only death. There is no way to escape. This is the punishing hand of God, and we should take it very seriously. To be disobedient to God is a serious, serious thing. We can talk about God's love and God's mercy, and I love to do that, and I love that message. And Jeremiah loved it too, but that's not the message of the day. The message of the day is you have tried God and disobeyed Him for so long that the time for repenting is over. Now is the time for punishment. Lamentations 1 continues towards the end. All my enemies have heard of my distress, Jeremiah writes. They rejoice at what you have done. May you bring the day you have announced so they may become like me, talking to God, saying, I know you've promised that our enemies will be dealt with. Bring that on, Lord, he prays. Let all their wickedness come before you. Deal with them as you have dealt with me because of all my sins. What a tragic, tragic prayer. And then in chapter 2, starting in verse 1, how the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the cloud of his anger. He has hurled down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. Without pity, the Lord has swallowed up all the dwellings of Jacob. In his wrath, he has torn down the strongholds of daughter Judah. He has brought her kingdom and its princes down to the ground in dishonor. Jeremiah, or Lamentations 2 continues as Jeremiah laments. The Lord is like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all her palaces and destroyed her strongholds. He has multiplied mourning and lamentation for daughter Judah. The Lord has rejected his altar and abandoned his sanctuary, talking about the temple that Solomon built. He has given the walls of her palaces into the hands of the enemy. The royal palace destroyed as well. They have raised a shout in the house of the Lord as on the day of an appointed festival. The enemy celebrates in the temple. In the temple. Lamentations 2, verse 11. My eyes fail from weeping, Jeremiah writes. I am in torment within. My heart is poured out on the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. What a tragic, tragic end to this great, great city, this great nation of Judah. The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They did not expose your sin to ward off your captivity. The prophecies they gave you were false and misleading. That's what Jeremiah is telling his people. You listened to the false prophets. They said what you wanted to hear. Paul would write to Timothy and he would warn him against people who want their preachers to only say what their itching ears want to hear rather than the word of the Lord. Jeremiah told them the word of the Lord and they refused to believe it. And the others, the false prophets, did not expose their sin, Jeremiah says, to ward off their captivity. They were false and misleading prophecies that they gave them instead. And now here we are, being destroyed at the hands of the Babylonians. The Lord has done what he planned, Jeremiah writes. He has fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. Jeremiah 2 continues as Jeremiah laments towards the end. Young and old lie together in the dust of the streets. My young men and young women have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered them without pity. As you summoned to a feast day, so you summoned against me terrors on every side. In the day of the Lord's anger, no one escaped or survived. Those I cared for and reared, my enemy has destroyed. Again, Jeremiah is lamenting in the book of Lamentations, continues on in chapter 3. He has walled me in so I cannot escape. He has weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out or cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. Like a bear lying in wait, like a lion in hiding, he dragged me from the path and mangled me and left me without help. He drew his bow and made me the target for his arrows. He pierced my heart with arrows from his quiver. So writes Jeremiah in chapter 3. Continuing on later in chapter 3, so I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I had hoped from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. We'll come back to that in just a moment, there in the middle of chapter 3. Jeremiah continues in chapter 3. Let him offer his cheek to the one who would strike him. Let him be filled with disgrace. Remember Jesus saying, turn the other cheek? Jeremiah is saying, let him sit alone in silence, for the Lord has laid it on him. Let him bury his face in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him offer his cheek to one who would strike him, and let him be filled with disgrace. Take your punishment, Jeremiah says. For no one is cast off by the Lord forever, that word of hope. Though he brings grief, he will show compassion. So great is his unfailing love, for he does not willingly bring affliction or grief to anyone. Sometimes it feels that way, doesn't it? I'm sure it felt that way to the people in Jerusalem of Jeremiah's day. Even though he had warned them and warned them and warned them, still, as they were living through this punishment, this horrible violence, as their city was destroyed and their leaders killed and the people taken off in chains into exile to Babylon on that long walk, still, there was this sense, surely God has told us he loves us with a never-ending love, an unfailing love. One day he will return with mercy. Jeremiah says that day is not today. Later in chapter 3, who can speak and have it happen if the Lord had not decreed it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that both calamities and good things come? Why should the living complain when punished for their sins? What haunting words. Why should the living complain when punished for their sins? What does all this tell us? All of this is telling us it's a warning. It's a warning, again, to trust and obey. It's a warning to do what God has called you to do. And as we read these words, we're tempted to say, oh, America, be warned. And granted, I get it. I want our nation to be a righteous nation, but America is not the chosen people of God today. That's the church. And as we read these lamentations, let's consider it a warning for our nation, whatever nation we live in. But take these words to heart. Ask yourself, am I living a life of trusting obedience? Can I honestly sing that song, Trust and Obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey? The Jews had gotten away from that, and they were no longer doing that, and now they were being punished. And so let's take it to heart individually first. Let's ask ourselves and remind ourselves we too must live according to the word and will of God, because it is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the angry God. That's what the writer of Hebrews warns us. And Jeremiah is warning us as well through all of these words. Let us examine our ways and test them, he writes in chapter 3 of Lamentations, and let us return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and our hands to God in heaven and say, we have sinned and rebelled, and you have not forgiven. You have covered yourself with anger and pursued us. You have slain without pity. You have covered yourself with a cloud so that no prayer can get through. You have made us scum and refuse among the nations. Jeremiah writes, my eyes will flow unceasingly without relief until the Lord looks down from heaven and sees. Lamentations chapter 3, verse 55. I called on your name, Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ears to my cry for relief. You came near when I called you, and you said, do not fear. Pay them back what they deserve, Lord, for what their hands have done. Put a veil over their hearts, and may your curse be on them. Pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens of the Lord. That's how Jeremiah feels, and he is openly sharing that with the Lord because of the horrible torment and pain that he feels at the loss of his land, his countrymen, his leaders, his nation, his city of Jerusalem. How the precious children of Zion, Lamentations 4 now. How the gold has lost its luster, the fine gold become dull. The sacred gems are scattered at every street corner. How the precious children of Zion, once worth their weight in gold, are now considered as pots of clay, the work of a potter's hand. The punishment of my people, he writes in chapter 4, is greater than that of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment without a hand turned to help her. Jeremiah says, this reminds me of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and the horrible sinfulness that was there in those cities. And now he sees it happening in his own city of Jerusalem. The punishment of my people is greater than that of Sodom. Lamentations 4, verse 11. The Lord has given full vent to his wrath. He has poured out his fierce anger. He kindled a fire in Zion that consumed her foundations. The kings of the earth did not believe, nor did any of the peoples of the world, that enemies and foes could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But it happened because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, who shed within her the blood of the righteous. Jerusalem was betrayed by its leaders, by its prophets and priests, by its evil kings that reigned and did not seek the will of the Lord like righteous King Hezekiah or King Josiah did. And so now the people of Jerusalem are paying. The Lord himself has scattered them, Jeremiah writes. He no longer watches over them. The priests are shown no honor, the elders no favor. Our end was near, our days were numbered, for our end had come, he writes. Chapter 5, verse 1. Remember, Lord, what has happened to us. Look and see our disgrace. And later on in chapter 5, our ancestors sinned and are no more, and we bear their punishment. For generations, God had warned the people, this day is coming, this day is coming. And now in Jeremiah's day, as he is an old man, that day is here. Joy is gone from our hearts, he writes. Our dancing has turned to mourning. Chapter 5, verse 19, you, Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures from generation to generation. Why do you always forget us? Why do you forsake us so long? Restore us to yourself, Lord, that we may return. Renew our days as of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure. What a tragedy. Are you angry with us beyond measure? Is there nothing we can say or do, Lord, that will bring that forgiveness around? Bill, why are you sharing so much from such a horrible, horrible message in time? Because we need to hear it. We need to hear it. We need to know how serious it is to flagrantly disobey the word of the Lord. Openly and rebelliously and willingly fall into sin and say, God, I don't care that this is wrong. I know it's wrong, but it's what I want to do. And we rationalize and we talk about the Lord's mercy and his love and his grace. And I believe all of those things and preach all of those things, rely on all of those things. But we must also, along with that, remember that the Lord is a righteous and holy and just God. And he demands of his people obedience and justice and righteousness and morality. And for us to refuse to live that way is to be on a path towards the same kind of end that the people of Jerusalem are experiencing as Jeremiah writes these lamentations. And in the midst of all of that, still, there is a word of hope. Jeremiah writes in chapter 3, so I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I hoped from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind. Lamentations 3, verse 21. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. See if you recognize these words. Lamentations 3, verse 22. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him. To the one who seeks him, it is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Were you reminded of a couple of songs we sing? One of them is, Great is thy faithfulness, O God our Father. You remember that song, right? Morning by morning, new mercies I see. That's that song, Great is thy faithfulness. And there's another song that comes through here that talks about the steadfast love of the Lord. Do you remember that? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. You know, we love those songs. And we think, you know, those songs, wow, that guy must have been having a really good day to write those songs. Talk about the mercies of the Lord, how they're never failing, how morning by morning, new ones I see, how great is the faithfulness of God. But here's the thing, Jeremiah was the man who wrote those words, who wrote the lyrics to those songs, and it was not in the best of times. It was right now. In the midst of these lamentations, in the midst of the fierce punishing hand of God, Jeremiah writes these words, Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, The Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him. To the one who seeks him, it is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. My dear friend, I hope you know today how much God loves you. And I hope you know today and that we are all reminded today of the holiness of this just and perfect Creator God that we serve. And to take heed, to hear the words of Jeremiah for us today, as he's been telling us to follow the Lord and to obey his will and keep his word. And now that his own people have failed that, he's telling us as he laments, the steadfast love of the Lord never fails. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. I hope that you remember that when times are great and when times are hard. Times are hard right now for Jeremiah and his people, and yet he can see and he can say, the steadfast love of the Lord never fails. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is our portion. Therefore, we will hope in him. May God bless you. May God bless his people everywhere, all around the world. That we would be the witness and the faithful word that Jeremiah was, whatever the circumstances. And may he bring his son soon. Come, Lord Jesus. God bless you.